Good morning. Welcome to Town Talk today. We are here with David Barrett, who is the director of Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont, and Beata Jensen, who's the cultural resource manager there. They just had a very successful event on Sunday, an open house, and we are going to talk about some other events and that they have coming up and also the beautiful gardens right now. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
David, just for those who may not know, give us a little reminder of who is Gary Melcher's.
Well, it's appropriate that I do that because we experienced this, you know, dozens of times this past weekend when we had our public open house and had over 450 people through. And probably half of those people had no idea what we were or why we were there or who Gary Melcher's was. And that was why we invited the community to come mm-hmm. share Belmont with us. Gary Melcher's was an artist who was born in 1860 in Detroit and made his reputation mostly in Europe in the late 1800s as an expatriate artist. But when World War One broke out, where he was working and teaching in Germany, he decided that it was best to leave Europe for the time being and move back to the States, where he opened a studio in New York. And he and his wife began looking for a country home outside of New York City. They had connections down in the Fredericksburg area through his wife's family, as well as friends from New York, and found Belmont and bought it in 1915, moved here in 1916, and while Gary commuted back and forth to New York to his studio and clients up there. During those early years, Mrs. Melcher's, Corinne, took over restoring the property, both the house and the gardens, made it her major project. In the mid-20s, Gary decided he didn't want to travel so much anymore, so he built a large studio and gallery building on site so he could work there. And then when he died in 1932, Corinne set aside the estate as a memorial to him and his art, and when she died in 1955, donated the entire property and all the collections to the Commonwealth of Virginia. So we are a state-owned property. We're administered by the University of Mary Washington, and we have 27 acres of woods and gardens and fields, as well as seven buildings, including a 1790s manor house, plus the stone studio, visitor center. We act as the Stafford County Visitor Center. We have a mile and a half of trails through the woods. We border on the river. We're a public park as well as an art museum and historic site. So we focus on the art of Gary Melcher's, but we bring a lot of other works in, as well as special programs, which some of which we'll be talking about. And we're open 6 days a week, year round.
What was the Belmont property before the Melcher's bought it?
It had been owned by a local businessman, Joseph Ficklin, in the mid-19th century, the Civil War era, and it stayed in his family through the time that the Melchers purchased it. So it's a very established historic property on one of the hills overlooking the river, along with several other large estates that you can see as you drive along River Road.
And a lot of people nowadays say they haven't heard of Gary Melcher's, but in his day, he was very well known around the world.
I've heard some refer to him as a rock star of his day. Might be a little bit exaggeration, but he was very popular and very successful, primarily as a portrait painter. That's where he made his money. He painted a lot of prominent individuals from the industrial families of the day and the political families of the day. He painted Mellons and Carnegies and Roosevelts and Vanderbilts. He was very active in the art world in Europe and in the States as far as exhibiting and competing his work. He and his wife spoke five languages. They lived in Paris, they lived in Holland, they lived in Germany, they traveled to England frequently, they came back and forth to the States. He was the hometown boy made good out of Detroit, and every time he went to visit his family in Detroit, he'd do another set of portraits of prominent families, including fellow Detroiters like Charles Freer of the Freer Gallery in Washington. He did murals for the Library of Congress, for various state capitals. His work evolved into a more impressionistic style in the early 20th century, and those are among the paintings that are most popular today. But in his day, the portraits and more realistic paintings were what made his reputation.
Do you think there's a resurgence in knowing him because of the popularity of Impressionism today?
That's one of the things that attracts people to his art now. Because it's a very colorful and dynamic type of painting that people are familiar with from all of the exhibitions of French Impressionism. People don't realize that Americans took up Impressionism probably about 20 to 30 years after the French mastered it, and the American Impressionists were therefore a little bit behind the times as far as world art movements. And by the time of World War I, Gehry's art, even the Impressionist style pieces, was starting to be looked upon as old-fashioned. And so by the 20s, he was still called upon by his former friends and clients to continue to do work, but he was not very well received in the avant-garde art world. In fact, he and a lot of his generation railed against modernism and the work of the Europeans, especially, who were destroying what they knew of as true art. And so by the 30s, his work had sort of disappeared from most exhibitions, and was actually more popular in Germany than anywhere else because of the conservative nature of their art. So he kind of faded from prominence after his death, and so there was a period of about 30 years when most people didn't even think about Gary Melchers. It wasn't until the late 70s that his work started to revive in the public eye, and today it is very popular for exhibitions of American art traveling around the country, as well as in the marketplace as far as auctions and sales at dealers. His work is very sought after now.
And his wife Corinne was leaving her own mark on Belmont while they were living there, and that's what we're going to focus on a lot today. Beate, you are the cultural resource manager, and you were going to tell us about the colonial revival movement and how that was important to Gehry's wife, Corinne.
Yes, the colonial revival movement actually, I think, influenced both Gehry and Corinne, and you can really see its mark at Belmont in what they did with the gardens and the house. And also their sort of civic duties that they undertook. And especially the gardens right now are beautiful. And I've been restoring the gardens for the last, I've been there 16 years now, I think. So I started with doing research on the gardens. And after 15 or 16 years of work, we are really starting to see how the gardens were during the time of the Melchers. And of course, I have to say that we are very fortunate to have the support of the Garden Club of Virginia to help us with this work. So that's been a very important factor in getting the gardens to where they are today.
And as we're talking today, this is Garden Week in Virginia, and a lot of the...
Yes, a lot of we have been on the Garden Week ourselves, and Mrs. Melchers was very important in the starting of Garden Week. She was one of the first people. There was a group here in Fredericksburg who decided that they needed to start raising funds to save the gardens at Kenmore, and that was the Rappahannock Valley Garden Club who started the whole idea of Garden Club, of Garden Week, and they got other clubs together to start this effort. And Mrs. Melchers was involved in that. And we have some wonderful photographs of her in colonial costumes, being a hostess. And Belmont was open that first year. That was, it was had our 80th celebration last year, correct?
For the Garden Club
for
of Virginia.
Garden Club yeah. of Virginia yeah. for the yeah. Garden Week. Mm-hmm. And it's been, quite an effort to get this going and to keep it going.
Well, when we come back, I want to hear what it was first like when you came, the gardens, and how it has transpired to the beautiful place that it is today. You're listening to Town Talk on WFVA News Talk 1230. We'll be right back. David Barrett and Beata Jensen from Gary Melcher's Home and Studio are here with me today. We had just started talking about the gardens because they have been renovated over the years. David, when did that first begin, that whole process of bringing Belmont back to how it was?
Well, I came in 1990, and to that point, the gardens had been maintained about the same as they had looked for, you know, maybe 20 years before that, because there wasn't really any dedicated staff. There was a caretaker who would do the mowing and, you know, maybe put in some flowers here and there. And using the layout of the beds and plantings that had already been there for many, many decades since Corinne's death. So a lot of the original features had been lost or obscured. After I arrived, we started talking with the Garden Club of Virginia about how they supported restorations of gardens. And I was unfamiliar with this. I hadn't lived in Virginia. I'm not a gardener and knew nothing about the whole project. And when we found out that they did support historical research or historically documented gardens, we started talking to them about the possibilities of them helping us with financially and professionally. And what it turned out was that they had never done work or supported a 20th century garden. And particularly, they'd never supported the restoration of a garden that was photographically documented. Most everything were colonial or 19th century gardens that had not had photography available. So everything was based on other types of research. So when we presented the possibility to them, they were intrigued at the possibility of a very accurate reproduction or recreation, as well as the idea of an artist's garden, as opposed to a politician or a historic figure. So they took us on and funded and hired contractors and designers to recreate everything that we could from the research we had at the time. And that's that first phase was completed in 1994. And then we had volunteers to do the maintenance. The Master Gardeners Association in the area were the only ones that could keep it up. And we had no staff to do that at the time. That took a few years. And then Beata joined us part-time in 1999, and really started delving into the records and the true research that had to be done to make things even more accurate. She's been there now since full time since 2000, and has taken it where it's never been done before, as they say, and much farther than we've ever envisioned it could be.
Beata, what attracted you to that position?
Well, I was just finishing up my degree in historic preservation at University of Mary Washington, or Mary Washington College as it was that time. And I had also won a scholarship to go to the Historic Landscape Institute at University of Virginia. That's a two-week residential program that is in its cooperation between UVA and Monticello. So during my studies, I had focused on landscapes. I am not a horticulturist, but I am a gardener. So that's something that during my studies, I always tried to focus on anything related to gardens. So I took, landscape preservation and preservation law, things relating to not landscapes and larger landscapes such as, cities. And it was actually quite by chance that I found out that Belmont was looking for a part-time gardener. I was in line at Giant, our social giant here in Fredericksburg.
Social giant.
In front of me was Gail Braxton, who at that time was director at Mayor Washington House, and I had met her through my studies, and she knew I was interested in gardens and gardening. And she said to me, they're looking for a gardener at Belmont. You should see David Barrett. And I'm ashamed to say that I, too, despite having been studying historic preservation in Fredericksburg, Virginia, did not know about Belmont. So I quickly took a tour and asked for an interview with David Barrett. And the rest, as they say, is history. I could immediately see the beauty of the place. And Joanna Catron took me under her wing, and really, once she realized that I was interested not just in the gardens but in research, she opened up the archives to me, and I just thought I had died and gone to heaven. I love research. So between working physically in the garden, as David said, there were things that were obscured. I started with just cleaning up areas and removing things that my research proved had just been planted very recently, maybe 10, 15, 5 years ago. Once I started removing things, then the bones of the garden started to be more evident. And then I used photographs, plant lists, diaries. We have such rich archives, so it's not really a matter of knowing what was there. I have a very good understanding. It's just, time and money to get it done.
Was it Corinne or Gary or both of them who left such good material that you use for research?
Most of the material that I have, you know, records are in Corinne's hand, but from reading and reading the archives and letters and diaries, I think Gary was quite involved when he was here, and I think he certainly had a hand in the aesthetic planning of the estate, but I think Corinne was the executive director in that, if you like. And they did take that sort of 1840s landscape that Joseph B. Ficklin had created, and they did the first restoration of the gardens, the arbors that are on either end of the what we call the long walk, and Mrs. Murch just called it the long walk. That's the boxwood walk in front of the house, which is a very prominent feature in the gardens and made by Joseph B. Ficklin circa 1840 or 50. They restore that and put roses back on those arbors and restore the four triangular beds that are in the south lawn at Belmont. But then they added their own touches, and such as the walls and gates, the summer house, and the several outbuildings like the cow barn and the carriage house, which today is our visitor center, and a stone garage. We have three outbuildings that date from the Ficklin period. That is the little round spring house that is in the middle of the drive in front of the house, the smokehouse, and what we call the stable, but originally was the kitchen to the building.
So the garden restoration is a very big project, not just looking at plants.
No, it's not just plants, and it's also ongoing. We you know, you never finish, because landscapes are not static. They keep growing and changing, and we can have one windstorm and have a huge change in the landscape that we didn't plan on. So it is an ongoing effort.
And there are some things that we can't really recreate as it was when the Melchers were there. They had the walkway and the house were surrounded by majestic elm trees for decades, and those were lost over the years to either Dutch elm disease, which, you know, any city in the country, you know, has lost those, or to storms or lightning, or and we have gone through, and Beata can tell you, you know, several attempts to replace those elms with disease-resistant varieties, but those have had to be replaced themselves a couple of times because those varieties themselves develop problems. So it's ongoing. You don't just, you know, restore it once and walk away and
sit back on the swing and
come back 20 years later. And there are changes that don't always meet with public approval, shall we say, because people remember Belmont over the decades as it looked when they visited and liked the way it looked at a particular time. But Beata has been trying to take things back to the Melchers era, or the 20s in particular. And that's not how a lot of people remember visiting Belmont or what they enjoyed about it the first time. Not just the elms, but one funny story, I should let Beata tell it, but I tell it all the time, is the story of our ivory tree, which is in the, when I arrived in 1990, directly opposite the front porch of the house in the island of Circle Drive, was a huge, beautiful magnolia tree that everyone loved and remembered and came out to see the blossoms every year, and it was a magnificent symbol of Belmont. One of the things that Beata decided she had to do, and we had discussions about it, about how to go about it and how to present it and what the reaction would be, was that tree, we found, had was not original to the Melchers era. It had been planted in the 1980s, so had no historic significance, had no connection to the research or to the way the place looked. So Beata made the decision, with my concurrence, that we had to take down the tree. We can continue if you need to take a break. Yeah,
that I want to hear how that reaction happened. Yeah. And we will continue with the story of the tree that had to come down at Gary Melcher's when we come back. You're listening to Town Talk on WFVA News Talk 1230. Yeah. So we're going to continue our story about the faded magnolia at Belmont with David Barrett, director, and Beata Jensen, cultural resource manager. So you were researching the history of the gardens, and there's this magnolia that
What happened was, well, in doing the research in the archives, I came across photographs, and it was obvious that this tree was planted circa 1980s, something like that. And by the 1999, 2000, the tree had gotten quite large. They grow very quickly. And it was growing so wide and so tall that it was obscuring the north window of the studio and also growing into the driveway itself. So for pedestrian traffic, and also at that time, I still had vehicles going in. I had to start cutting off the lower limbs, and then the whole tree just looked funny where this, it looked like a poof ball with the bottom cut off. And I approached the Garden Club of Virginia. They were about to do another round of restorations for us, actually the first round of those famous elm trees that we've talked about earlier. And I said, could we please take the magnolia down? And they said, fine. And I said, actually, could we leave the stump at about, 12, 15 feet? And they said, why? And I said, well, Mrs. Melchers had what her caretaker called an ivory tree there. And when he first said ivory tree to me, I said, what's that? He said, well, ivory on it. Ivy is what he meant to say. And sure enough, I found other photographs in the archives that showed actually in about the 1920s and 30s there was a silver maple there that had ivy growing up it. The silver maple died, but Mrs. Melchers left a stump, and by the 1940s it looked like a stump with covered in ivy. Actually, it looked from a distance like it was a small magnolia. And with some pressure, the Garden Club said, sure, let's do it. We want to be accurate. So they left the stump, and I planted some ivy around the bottom. I don't know if you heard this about ivy, but there is something saying to it about ivy is that first it sits, then it creeps, and then it leaps. Well, the ivy I planted and tended very carefully sat for about 3 or 4 years.
So we
had this horrible dead stump with about 2 feet of ivy on the bottom. And people were horrified, and I was, but I am, once you get to know me, I'm very stubborn and determined. And for years, I just ignored it. And one year, it did leap. And it is very dramatic now. And David said during our break, it is a symbol of one of those things that were very popular during the colonial revival time. These things that are sort of ruins and romantic and a little bit worn and looking old. And there's another great story that I got from the earlier caretaker, Bill Chandler. They built these wonderful stone walls all around Belmont. And according to Bill Chandler, who got this story from Dylan, who was the Melchers' caretaker, so I'm sort of third generation caretaker at Belmont, that they built the stone walls, and then Dylan was told by Mrs. Melchers to plant ivy on them because she wanted stone walls covered in ivy so it looked old, like in Europe. And she didn't want shiny new stone walls. And according to Bill Chandler, Gary Melchers got very upset when he saw his beautiful, expensive stone walls covered in ivy. So I now interpret a little bit Gary Melchers. Every 4 years or so, we take the ivy off the walls, so you can see the stone walls, and we are in a Gary Melchers face right now. And I let the ivy then grow back up, and then I take it back off again. So it's a cyclical, again, kind of tending gardens, a cyclical. It's not something you start with and then finish.
So you're meeting both of their desires there, showing it both ways.
I hope they're both happy.
You mentioned the colonial revival movement, and Corinne, was that was what she really based her decorating and her gardening on.
I think so. That was a movement that you know, started with the 1886 centennial in Philadelphia, a time where people looked backwards and said, you know, we're celebrating 100 years as a nation. And they started to look backwards towards what was American, what was, who are we, where are we going? Some of it was a reaction to the time. At that time, there were a lot of immigration from Europe, from Poland, from Russia, from, you know, Italy mm-hmm. and Ireland. And I think a lot of Americans felt a little threatened that who are all these come-heres? These are not us. And there was a looking back to say, who are we? What is American? What is the American ethic that we need to teach these new immigrants to embrace? And that, in then later on with the 1883 Columbian Exposition in Chicago, they really started looking at, you know, arts and crafts, other movements like America Beautiful Movement, looking backwards and saying, oh, we need to take a leading role. So it became the leading classes, the upper classes, took a leading role in saying, this is what America should look like. We need to be active. We need to take a place. And out of that grew the Garden Club of Virginia efforts to restore the gardens and, you know, of course, at the time, Williamsburg in Virginia. We can think of Mount Vernon, the Ladies Association of Mount Vernon. Deerfield, Massachusetts was another mm-hmm. place where ladies, again, took on the role of making the effort to preserve the past.
When people visit Belmont, what give examples of what they'll see that portrays that colonial revival movement in the architecture or the gardens?
Well, some of the things that they embraced were these gardens, parterre gardens with, you know, boxwood, that is edging gardens with roses or other flowers in the middle. The long walk, I think, even though it isn't a colonial element, is a typical colonial revival.
The colonial revival.
Yeah, but that's the other funny thing about the colonial revival. They didn't really, most of the things that they embraced were not really colonial, because that's pre-1776, if you want to be correct. But anything that was old, it was, they just wanted something that looked older and romantic and sort of harkened back to a time when life was more simple, before the Industrial Revolution, before the country was overrun by people who were maybe different from those who were born here.
And you have a workshop or a talk coming up Sunday, April 26th at Belmont at 2 p.m. on the Colonial Revival Movement.
Yes, and I will draw on the history of the Colonial Revival Movement, but then also bring out elements from the architecture at Belmont, what the Melchers did to alter the house, to make it look more colonial, because it's really a federal style house, and in the gardens as well. And also, I will refer to some of the artwork. And of course, that leads into Joanna Catron's talk coming the following Sunday.
And Joanna Catron is the curator at Belmont, and she was going to be speaking about the Painted Garden on Sunday, May 3rd at 2 p.m. And both of these presentations are free. If you want to tour the gardens and the home, there's the entrance fee, but the presentations themselves are free. David, tell us a little bit about the Painted Garden talk that'll be coming up.
Joanna's talk will be associated with a small exhibition we have on view now through the first week of June, focused on a borrowed painting called The Crimson Rambler by Gary Melchers. It's a painting of that Gary did in his garden in Holland that illustrates a very popular subject for painters of the day. Harking back to Beata's comments about a reaction against industrialization and the rise of cities, artists as well as people who owned homes and estates were looking to embrace the beautiful, the simple, the colorful, the non-gray cities, and artists in particular, with the acceptance of Impressionism, were able to use that style to, you know, really create paintings that were in demand and gorgeous. The one thing that is different about the Crimson Rambler of Gehry's is that it's the only painting that he that we know of where he painted the garden without a human figure in it. It's the garden itself as a subject. So Joanna will be talking about not only that work and how it connects to Gehry's other paintings of gardens, but also how his work fits into the work of other artists working at the same time and connects to the Colonial Revival and other movements of the period. And that'll be an illustrative presentation also at 2 o'clock on May 3rd.
And when we come back, I want to talk about what is blooming right now at Belmont and why this is such a beautiful time of year to visit. I'm Susan Larson with Fredericksburg Today Online News, and you're listening to Town Talk on WFVA News Talk 1230. I'm here with David Barrett, director of Gary Melcher's Home and Studio at Belmont, and Beata Jensen, who's the cultural resource manager and has been working for more than 16 years now, restoring the gardens at Belmont to their state when Gary and Corinne lived there, looking mostly at the Colonial Revival movement and how they used that to plan their gardens. But you do have a plant there that you say wasn't at the home when Gary lived there, and that is?
That's true. I have planted a Crimson Rambler at Belmont because I saw a picture of the painting that we now have on exhibit, and I just thought we need to have that in the garden. So I tried to be very accurate within the main gardens, within the walls of Belmont. I try to be very accurate to what the Melchers had. Outside of that, I feel a little looser to put in things that I would like to have but might not fit with the gardens of Belmont. But so we have the Crimson Rambler. It's growing on the lower wall in the pasture there, and I hope that it will be blooming around the time of Joanna's talk. As you know, right now we have tulips and daffodils growing, and they should be going for another couple of weeks. The tulips show that might be over with the end of this week, all depending on the weather. You know, it's hard to tell. And then, of course, next coming up are roses and peonies, foxgloves, all the romantic, lovely flowers that
And so many, of the spring flowers bloom for such a short time. I asked you about azaleas. When would they be coming into bloom? Because I know April usually in central and northern Virginia. And you said no azaleas.
No, I have not found any evidence that Mrs. Melcher's had azaleas at the property, so I haven't planted any.
And how do you keep up year to year with all that there is to do, the replanting, the weeding, the research that continues to go on?
Well, I do have some wonderful people to help me. Not enough, but, you know, we do the best we can. I have wonderful staff. Dave Ludeker has been with us for over 10 years now, and he has really helped me a lot with restoring the gardens to that period. And then we have two seasonal workers. We have Kim Lange and Jody Wilkin, who just started with me. So that helps a lot during this, you know, the really busy season of the spring and summer. It's good to have that extra help. And then in the winter is when I try to do most of my research and writing.
As the gardens are resting.
One of the nice things about what Beata does is that she's out there hands-on most days when it's nice, and our visitors often will stop and chat and ask questions, and there's a lot of interaction there. So the visitors, I think, enjoy that part of their visit, in that they can actually talk and learn about the gardens through Beata when she's outside. And so that's a little different than a lot of the larger sites that you go to.
Yeah, the visitor interaction is one of the most fun things that I have in the garden. And I love seeing people coming. And I have a lot of people come on a regular basis just to walk the grounds to see what's changing and what's new. And it's fun to have that little fan club. And I encourage anyone to come up for a walk. We have our woodland walks. There's about, like David said, about a mile and a half if you do the complete thing. It goes down to the river. It's one of the few, I think the only public place in Stafford County where you can access the falls of the Rappahannock River. And it's really beautiful. Lots of fishermen are down there now.
And the trails and the gardens are open for walking without an extra fee.
Yes. I did not know that.
Yeah, you can come through the visitor center during the day and say, I just want to walk the grounds. You're not looking for a tour. And you know, we'll let you do that. The trails are open, you know, all the time, you know, sort of sun up to sundown. There's parking areas and entrances to the trails. We have a lot of people coming with their dogs and their children and just walking through. The trails are groomed by Dave and Beata and the staff.
And also we have our master naturalists who give a tour every last Sunday of the month at 2:00. So it would be the same time as my talk. Yeah. And they also come weekly and pick up trash along the river and help maintain the trails. And I've started to do some ivy removal along, you know, the trees in the woods. And they're just a great group of people. And it's a lot of fun to see activity on the grounds.
Yeah, when Mrs. Melcher's donated the property, she specifically said in her will that she wanted Belmont to be a public park. And so the addition of the trails has really helped us fulfill those wishes.
Will you all be part of the Community Give coming up?
Not this year.
Okay. No. Wanted to bring that up because I know earlier this year you were facing some thoughts that you might have to close for a few months.
Yeah, we decided that we had gone to our supporters quite a few other times this year, and that the Community Give, while a wonderful activity and for a lot of organizations, that this year we decided to hold off because we just recently asked for some extra help from our supporters to make up for some state budget cuts this year.
It came through too.
Yeah.
They did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to the supporters, and that's very humble of you all. And I can say, because I'm such a fan of Belmont, but if you want to help out Belmont at any time, because it is so beautiful right now. Beata, do you have a favorite season in the gardens? Can you pick a time?
I really can't. Of course, spring is beautiful, but year-round, there's always something happening. There's always something blooming. Yeah. And the bones, again, of the garden, you know, the long walk. If I have that raked and weed-free, there's nothing more pretty than that. And that's pretty year-round.
Yeah, Beata tries to keep something blooming all the time because we've become such a popular site for wedding ceremonies and receptions.
That's right.
That the brides are always wanting to know what's going to be blooming. And she does her best to try and predict.
Something will bloom.
But there's always some color, and it's gorgeous for all sorts of photography and wedding events.
So Belmont is open 6 days a week. There is an admission fee to tour the house and the studio. Right. Is that correct?
Right.
If you want to walk the grounds, you can just come into the visitor center and let that be known.
Right.
And the trails. Where do you access the trails from?
There are a couple of entrances, both from the main garden down by the summer house and from our lower parking lot that you will see. And we also have a trail map that's available inside the visitor center when it's open.
We've been talking with David Barrett, director of Gary Melcher's Home and Studio at Belmont, and Beata Jensen, the cultural resource manager. Go visit. It is so beautiful. I'm Susan Larson, publisher of Fredericksburg Today online news at fredericksburg.today. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. You've been listening to Town Talk. Have a great day.